Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Welcome back. It is Wednesday, March 30th. I'm Mark Bayshore. Later this hour, a former standout Michigan State University basketball player has written, is getting into the children's book arena. He's written, Kelvin Torbert has written a children's book. We'll visit with Kelvin Torbert later this hour. Neighbors, Wednesday means neighbors in action. We're going to hear about an interesting group that combines skill building and self-esteem building for young girls with running. Running seems to be the core activity for girls on the run. We'll visit with Stephanie McClintock and Megan Tressel, who's a coach, a running coach, and the mother of a girl involved in Girls on the Run. Also, MSU jazz pianist Ron Newman performing later this hour here on Current State. At the top of our program, by 2026, state officials want to see Michigan as one of the top performers in education. Department of Education leaders say that a key part of reaching that goal is reducing the impact of high risk factors that lead to students falling behind or dropping out. New guidelines from the State Board of Education are aimed at helping schools address those risk factors for LGBTQ students. They range from supporting gay-straight alliance clubs to letting transgender students use the restroom that matches their gender identity. But the recommendations have created a backlash from Republican lawmakers and some parents. State House Speaker Kevin Cotter says the board didn't alert parents and the public to the proposed guidelines, and other Republicans have said some of the policies would compromise student safety and privacy. Advocates, on the other hand, say that the guidelines are about protecting the safety and privacy of LGBTQ students. The draft guidelines have generated over 5,000 online comments as of this morning. Now, the State Board of Education has announced it will extend the public comment period for at least an extra 30 days. Here to give us a perspective on both sides of the issue, Executive Director for Equality Michigan, Stephanie White. Steph, welcome.
Hey, hi, Mark.
And we're also joined by on the phone by Republican State Representative and member of the House Education Committee, Tim Kelly. Tim, welcome to Current State.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for inviting me.
Stephanie, the president of the State Board of Education, John Austin, has said this is about creating a safe learning environment for LGBTQ students. Why do you think these guidelines are the way to do that?
Well, Mark, we know that from the Michigan Youth Risk Assessment Behavior Study that LGBT students are 2.5 times more likely to be threatened with a weapon at school, to feel unsafe. And I think anything that our schools do to send a signal that all students are welcome and have the right to an education and should be respected for who they are, those kinds of measures set the right tone in our schools. And we know from schools around the country and around Michigan who have already adopted policies like these that it does make students safer.
Tim Kelly, you and other Republicans have raised concerns about student privacy and safety, among others. Tell us why you think broadly. Why do you think these recommendations are misguided?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the State Board for continuing or expanding their time for comment. I think that they're going to get an earful, and rightly so. You know, you opened up this as this is part of the 10 and 10 effort by the State Board, and let me say that that's a stretch to think that doing what we can to accommodate LGBTQ students is going to raise student achievement in Michigan. But having said that, I think we want to have a welcoming environment for all students, but, you know, when you try and, you know, take care of a small percentage of people at the expense of a larger majority, I think you got big problems.
Now, these are voluntary guidelines, and the Department of Education has said that schools were asking for guidance on navigating LGBTQ issues. If individual schools can still make their own choices on these policies, why is having the state provide guidelines still a problem?
Well, again, if they want to offer the guidelines, fine, but I think that they're going to find that they need to be rewritten pretty substantially. When you obfuscate what's going on in the school between parent and student, you're going to have big problems. This isn't a social petri dish. You know, school schools aren't social petri dishes for kids to explore their sexuality. They're there to learn, and I think that the State Board of Education ought to be more concerned about our falling behind the nation as far as student achievement than worrying about this kind of stuff.
I agree. Our schools are definitely places where we need to be focused on learning. And I think when we talk to students and we talk to teachers and administrators, both here in Michigan and around the country, we got to remove these kinds of barriers that prevent kids from showing up to school, from being their full selves and focusing on the work. If you talk to schools and teachers where they allow children to designate their own nickname, which is the way they do it in the Ann Arbor schools, the kids will just come in and say, hey, I want you to call me Steph. And the teacher says, fine, end of issue. Let's go back to focusing on the education. Those kids actually show up to school. They do a much better job of learning. So in fact, there's a lot of proof already out there. There's no need to speculate on what this will or won't do. We know from fact and experience that these kinds of policies actually do raise achievements and protect all the students.
Stephanie, let me continue with you. The part of these guidelines that's generating the most controversy are the ones dealing with restroom and locker room access for transgender students.
Right.
Now, if the recommendations were pursued by a middle school, let's say, which appears to be possible, you've got a scenario where a 12-year-old with the body of a boy could use the girl's restroom.
Correct.
Now, the discussion for locker rooms seems to be a little bit different. We'll get to that in a minute. How do you feel about that specific bathroom scenario?
I mean, I think every person deserves a right to privacy for their medical information, for their medical history, and for any procedures that have or haven't happened to their body. That's just a basic principle that we have for respecting privacy in our country, and this is no different. Children, transgender people may or may not go through various medical interventions, but that's their privacy. Our gender, one thing that I think is important for people to understand is that our gender is not determined by necessarily by our chromosomes. And that's something that affects, you know, like people know, a small percentage of the population. However, for those kids, they do exist. They do have a right to go to school and to be safe.
We're going to disrupt the bathroom habits
nope.
of first and second graders
nope.
over some confusion
nope.
by some. Is
nope.
that?
It doesn't
oh,
disrupt.
No,
there's
that's
no,
not what
there's,
this would be?
There's no disruption. I mean, I'll just say the proof is in the pudding. When kids transition and are accepted for who they are in school.
What proof do you have?
Well, there's plenty of examples here in Michigan and around the country of schools that have adopted
these
policies.
This is a battle that has not
policies.
Been won in here. Public court.
Let Steph finish making her point, Tim, then you'll have the floor.
All right. Mm-hmm.
So there are plenty of schools in which kids transition, and it's very it can be very confusing for people at first, and people have questions, and I understand that new things are hard for people to accept, but if we really focus on what is in the best interest of the children, then we will do these strategies that are in the best interest of the children that protect everyone and let everybody go back to education.
Tim Kelly, what do you make of all
well,
that?
Well, I think it's hogwash. I mean, this is just absolutely absurd. This is an argument that has not been won in the court of public opinion, and to suggest that it has is terribly erroneous. This has to be discussed and for a much longer period than a couple weeks at a state board level and all of a sudden adopted. Now, I can understand if you have single toilet bathrooms that a unisex or family or something like that can be utilized. But when you talk about stalled facilities that are going to be transgendered is patently absurd at this point. Like I said, you have not won this argument in public court.
Representative Tim Kelly is a member of the Michigan House's Education Committee. We're talking about proposed guidelines on LGBTQ students drafted by the State Board of Education. We're also joined by Executive Director of Equality Michigan, Stephanie White. Let me follow up on a point of Tim Kelly's here. Could it be argued that these scenarios are going to require more finesse and more sensitivity to implement than 12-year-olds and 13-year-old students have, and maybe even teachers and administrators?
Well, definitely we need a lot of education and training and guidance for people to be able to implement you know, wisely the policies that make our schools open and safe for all students. And that's exactly what the State Board of Education is doing with these guidelines. I think that, you know, this is a natural next step from our anti-bullying law that was passed in 2011 and signed by our governor that says we need to have schools that respect all students, period. Now, once you pass a law like that, you need to provide people with training and guidance on how to really implement it. And our schools have been asking for these kinds of guidelines. And my organization is also available to provide more training and input. There are a lot of resources out there. I should also mention that the Department of Education at the federal level, the Office of Civil Rights, has been very clear on this point. They're, that transgender students are protected from discrimination under Title IX, and that includes providing them with safe access to bathrooms and locker rooms.
Tim Kelly.
Provide an access for a bathroom for them, not open it up to the wider population. This is accommodating. Again, this is what several people just don't understand. Why we accommodate small percentages of people to the detriment of the larger populace.
We have the opinion that all kids, regardless of their gender identity and sexual orientation, deserve a safe educational environment, and there is no negative impact on
this
the other
less,
kids.
Well,
so I think, yes, even the smallest 1% of students in Michigan deserve to go to school.
Yes, they do deserve to go to school. Yes, they do deserve to be safe. But they also need to conform to what's currently the mores of the national body. This to suggest that this is you know, this might be something that we all take for granted 20 years from now, 10 years from now. But I'm telling you, it's not there now, and you need to lightly step into this. And not just force it on people, especially to keep parents in the dark about, you know, you mentioned earlier about somebody coming in and saying, well, call me Steph today. I think that's something that a parent ought to be apprised of at home.
You do hear, Steph, you do hear skeptics and critics of this maintain that there is a tail wagging the dog kind of dynamic in play here. And Tim Kelly is making that point as well. How do you navigate that?
Well, obviously the ideal is for parents to be involved in their children's lives. Look, I'm a parent. I get that. And certainly for something as significant as like our basic sexuality, our gender identity, these are big issues that kids are wrestling with. And we all hope that's something that kids feel safe enough to be able to share with their parents, but unfortunately, it's not always the case. Unfortunately, for some kids, their home isn't safe. And so for those kids, the schools have to offer some sort of safe harbor. You know, children need, there are basically three institutions that children rely on to be safe: their home, their schools, and their faith community. And if they're not accepted by any three of those core institutions, then they have really bad health outcomes.
Tim Kelly, let me ask you this. I mean, you asked earlier of Steph for, you know, where's your data? Where's the studies? Where is that?
Yeah.
There, I mean, the Board of Education does point to data from Michigan youth risk behavior that shows, as Stephanie pointed out, LGBTQ students are too...
Well, this is a self-reported study, one small sampling. Again, I mean, there's not a body of work. We're talking about thousands of years that we're talking about on the other side of this, and you're talking about a small sampling of self-reported stuff that and largely some in some environments and schools where this is encouraged of the kids to do. To explore their sexuality, not to be taken for granted, whatever body part they came with, and this is something that ought to be taken care of in the home. I understand that there's some families that would for some kids that are afraid to come out or that in fear of retribution of their parents. I get that, but at the same time, you know, there's. When you're talking about first, second, third, fourth graders who aren't sure about any of all this, and then to encourage the free association, like I said, a social petri dish in schools, just an absolute wrong thing to go.
Let me follow up here. I got to wrap up, and I'll wrap up with you, Tim Kelly. Representative Potvin pushed to eliminate the Board of Education's travel budget. A House Appropriations Subcommittee last Wednesday did just that in an amendment to a budget bill, But that was before the board announced that it was extending the public comment period. Do you still feel like that's warranted?
Yes, I was on the committee that I was one of the votes that voted for that, and I think it's a signal to the board to rethink what they're doing here. And by the way, I don't think they would have extended the comment period had Speaker Cotter not raised this to a public outcry. This is all in reaction to the Republicans being upset that the board was doing something that's kind of in the dark of night. And I think that rightly so, they've extended the comment period. Like I said, they're going to get an earful, and I think they're going to adjust their thinking on this.
Well, Stephanie, as Tim's had the floor here for a while, we'll give you 30 seconds here.
I just want to thank the School Board of Education for taking the time and being so thoughtful to draw on best practices and tried and true measures from around the country that do increase children's safety and their success at schools. I think it's terrific.
We have been talking about the controversy over guidelines from the State Board of Education on how schools can support LGBTQ students. Our guests today have been State Representative Tim Kelly and Executive Director of Equality Michigan, Stephanie White. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
And coming up on Current State, Girls on the Run is a nonprofit that not only inspires girls to become independent thinkers, but teaches them healthy exercise habits. We'll speak with the director and one of the coaches that works with the Mid-Michigan chapter to find out how they do it. Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Kelvin Torbert is one of the greatest high school basketball players in Michigan history. After winning the state's Mr. Basketball Award in 2001, Torbert went on to play in college here at Michigan State and professionally overseas. He's launched a new endeavor, and Scott Pohl is here to tell us about it. What's Kelvin Torbert up to these days, Scott?
Well, Mark, would you believe he's the author of a children's book? Here's a taste of a promotional video for the book.
The new book is called KT and the Radical Round Ball. It's written by author and publisher Kellen Brandon and Michigan State University basketball great Kelvin Torbert. It's also full of super cool illustrations designed by illustrator extraordinaire Neville McKinney.
I had Kelvin Torbert and his co-author and publisher Kellen Brandon come in to talk about the project. Kelvin Torbert and Kellen Brandon, welcome to Current State.
Thank you for having us.
Good to have you here. Kelvin, tell us about KT and the Radical Round Ball. First of all, are you KT? You must be, right?
Yeah. It's a younger state of me.
Is this a kid's book version of your autobiography then?
It's kind of like a spinoff of my childhood a little bit, similar, but it's more a children's book to kind of educate kids on being kind of humble and bettering themselves.
Yeah. What's the storyline, and what age range do you think might enjoy the book?
I'm thinking it's pretty sure from about 6 years old to middle school age, and the storyline is just about a kid that loved basketball and had a couple obstacles with kids coming from out of town in different areas and using basketball to kind of better himself and be a better person.
Does the book take place in Flint?
Yes, Flint, okay. Michigan.
All right. Kelvin, we're going to hear from Kellen in a minute, but Kelvin, I'd like you to read a passage from the book for me, if you would.
Okay. Here we go. I was born in Flint, Michigan, and I love playing basketball. In Flint, sports are a very big deal. Over the years, we had some amazing athletes come from our town. It really makes me proud to be from Flint. Carl Banks, Jim Abbott, Clarissa Shields, Mark Ingram, Brandon Carr, the Flintstones, and the list goes on. But there's one guy who stood out above them all. His name was Donnie the Dynamite Dawson. People say he was radical with the round ball. I've never had a chance to see him in action. I've only heard stories about how great he was. Many people say he was too good to be on Earth, so he jumped off of it.
And that's a good entree into the story. Now, Kellen Brandon, you're the publisher, also the co-author. How did you connect with Kelvin Torbert?
Well, I've actually been friends with Kelvin since high school. I moved I'm born in Flint, and I actually moved to Texas for a couple years, and then I moved back. Kelvin was one of the first people that I linked up with playing basketball, and I've been knowing him ever since.
Okay, now the new kid in town in the book is from Texas. Is that you?
That is me.
Yes. All right. Former MSU basketball star Kelvin Torbert has written a book for children called KT and the Radical Round Ball. We're talking with him and the book's publisher and co-author, Kellen Brandon. Kellen, now, you've been sponsoring the BP School Takeover for 4 years now in conjunction with National Reading Month. So I'd like you to tell us what got that project started, why you're interested in encouraging children to read.
What got BP School Takeover started was me starting an independent publishing company. And by doing so, I was able to get speaking engagements and just all type of things started to come into play for me. I feel like I was a former athlete, and I realized during that time how important literacy was to my success. And so what I wanted to do was be able to provide that same insight and awareness for youth, because a lot of times we take that for granted and they don't realize how important literacy is to their success going into adulthood.
Does your publishing company specialize in children's books?
Not children's books. Actually, this is our first children's book.
Okay.
But we have a program called Young Authors, where we nurture authors that are in middle school going into high school and give them the opportunity to write and publish as well.
Now, this project started at Bryant Elementary School in Flint, right?
Yes.
Is that where you went?
No.
Kelvin, did you go to school there?
No, I didn't.
Okay, okay.
At the time, it was a principal that was my fourth grade teacher.
Oh.
And he was principal at Bryant, and I ran the pitch by him, and he said, well, bring it on over here. And that's where it got started and how we got going with it.
And that school has closed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So now your project has branched into Lansing's Willow Elementary, right?
Yes. A friend, I met him at a barbershop. He's from Lansing, and I was looking for a school to serve as I'm now living in the Lansing area. And Anthony Clemens, who's a player at Iowa, gave me Willow Elementary and their principal's contact. And so I reached out to him, and he loved the idea. And so this will be our second year at Willow.
So what does this project do for the students at Willow?
Well, what we do is we try to get at least 30 adult volunteers to sacrifice their lunch period to come and read for an hour with children. And then some of our sponsors, Domino's Pizza is one of our sponsors. We reflect on what we read, and then we have pizza and kind of hang out. And we just really want to build healthy adult-youth relationships while also raising the awareness and importance of literacy.
Sometimes a project like this has a focus on minority children, and maybe the adults also perhaps come from the minority community. Is there an emphasis like that here?
There is definitely an emphasis on that. Flint released 4 years ago a score of literacy in the state, and it ranked among one of the lowest in the state and in the nation. And that was really alarming for me. And so I see a lot of deficiency in our adults, minority populations. And so that's one of the reasons we wanted to reach to that age demographic.
All right. Now, Kelvin, you're known in these parts mostly for your basketball career here at MSU from 2001 to 2005. And, of course, your outstanding high school career at Flint Northwestern before that. You were one of the infamous MSU Flintstones. When you were a student at MSU, what did you study? And did you do a lot of writing in those days when you were in college?
Honestly, I didn't do a lot of writing, but I studied communications. And within that, we did a lot of kind of branching off, reading stories, and a lot of writing off of stories in a lot of my classes. So I think that was a good beginning start for me to get into this type of atmosphere.
I know MSU athletics and athletes at MSU frequently do outreach projects in the community and work with children, visiting hospitals, visiting schools. Was that a focus of the MSU basketball team when you were on the Spartan squad?
I think that was definitely a focus. I think Coach puts a huge emphasis on that. He tried to explain to us that we are like a face of the children. They see us. They look up to us. They know us. And the best thing for us is to show our face and be around and just be there to help a little bit. And it means a lot.
Now, Kelvin, I understand you have an organization of your own that's called Hope for a Better Tomorrow. Can you tell me about that?
It's the Kelvin Torber Hope for a Better Tomorrow. It was a foundation I started probably about 6 years ago while I was still playing, and it was just basically me just setting up a foundation for some of my other overseas buddies that could help out, and to kind of just help out with the cancer research, which I lost both of my parents from cancer. So it was a huge thing for me to try to do what I can to try to help the cancer research and hopefully find a cure for it.
You mentioned your overseas buddies. People may not be aware that you played professionally overseas after your college days wrapped up. So you played professionally with players from all over the country, but around the world. What countries did you play in?
I played in France, Greece, Russia, Belgium, Germany. I did a short 2 week stint in Mexico.
2 weeks in Mexico. A lot of people have spent 2 weeks in Mexico. Maybe on vacation, not working.
Exactly.
So along with writing this book, what are you doing these days?
Now I'm just working over at Meijer Outbound Logistics and just doing a little like administrative stuff and just a little job to help me get into the real world, as we say it.
Yeah. Well, listen, Kellen, I want to ask you about when it first occurred to you maybe that you had an author, a budding young author here in Kelvin Torbert.
It's been a vision of mine for a while, but it's taken a lot longer to get him to buy into it.
Yeah.
It's just something that as young African-American men growing up in the inner city, Flint being one of the most dangerous cities in the country, that's just something that's not highlighted or something that we look at as the right thing to do. Ironically, the word right. And so talking to him and letting him know about some of the things that I've experienced just from me being, I played at Tennessee State University, so not as big a school as Michigan State, just knowing what he could do and how he could impact youth, which is something he's really passionate about, is probably what brought him in. And we talked about what type of story we could write, and then we just said, let's do it.
So much of the news out of Flint lately has been about the lead in the water and what that means to Flint families. Do you still have family in Flint, either of you? And what are you hearing from family and friends that still live in Flint about what life is like these days in that city? Kelvin?
Yeah, I actually still have family. All my brothers and my aunts live there. So, I mean, just coming from them is just like it's getting to a state of now it's where do we go from here, you know? We're getting all the water donations, but, I mean, they love it. But now it's a state of when are we going to start fixing the pipes and start doing some construction to get the major problem fixed, because you can only use so much water. You can only donate so many water bottles and gallons of water. So now it's people just trying to get more outright with it and trying to help out and trying to encourage the building process to speed up.
Kellen Brandon, you still have family in Flint?
Yes. Majority of my family is still in Flint. I think the reality of the situation hit me when we went to go stay with my wife's mother. And I was going into the bathroom, and she had a basket of water bottles set to the side of the sink for us to use to wash up. And I just realized how difficult it was to do that. And I couldn't imagine, you know, having my children and trying to do that every day and still follow a schedule of an adult. It's really difficult. And that's when it hit home for me that something has to happen and fast.
Tell me how people can get a copy of the book.
You can get a copy of the book by going to www.brandonpublishing.com. You can also order the book on amazon.com. And as Kelvin goes around to the different Barnes & Nobles in this region, they'll be stocking the book there as well.
The book is called KT and the Radical Round Ball. It's a children's book written by former MSU basketball player Kelvin Torbert and co-author and publisher Kellen Brandon. Kellen, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
I like that. I like the chorus there. For Current State, this is Scott Pohl.
And coming up on Current State, pianist and MSU jazz professor Ron Newman gathers a few close friends on the stage of Fairchild Theater this Friday. Current State's Peter Wharf talks with Ron Newman about the performance. That and more after the break on Current State. Current State on 90.5 WKAR. We're always at WKAR.org. Society can throw a lot of messages at boys and girls from the time they're very young. It can be beneficial for them to have a place to go where both can form friendships, boys with boys, girls with girls, and learn, share, and be supported. Girls on the Run is a nonprofit geared toward girls in the 3rd through 8th grades. Their mission is to inspire girls to be joyful, healthy, and confident using a fun, experience-based curriculum which creatively integrates running. The Mid-Michigan chapter of Girls on the Run started in 2007 in Shiawassee County, and it's since expanded into Ingham, Eaton, Clinton, and Genesee counties. Joining us in the studio here on Neighbors in Action today is the director of Girls on the Run in Mid-Michigan, Stephanie McClintock. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Second Stephanie on the program this hour, believed to be a current state record. And Megan Tressel, who is a volunteer coach with the nonprofit, whose daughter's also been in the program. Hi, Megan.
Hi there.
Stephanie, explain how Girls on the Run works exactly. Where do you meet? How often?
Okay. So the girls meet twice a week in small teams where we teach the girls life skills through, like you said, engaging lessons, fun movement activities. The teams mostly meet in school buildings. We have a few program sites that are actually YMCA locations.
What are some of these life lessons? Did you refer to it as life lessons? I forget it exactly. What are some life skills?
These skills? So the skills that we help the girls develop and improve upon are that of confidence. We help them to learn to feel confidence in who they are, develop strength of character. They learn to respond to others and themselves with care. They learn to create positive connections with peers and adults, and also to make a meaningful contribution to community and society.
Megan, you've been a coach with Girls on the Run for a few years. One of the focuses of your curriculum is to help girls understand themselves. How do you think you do that?
I think, you know, the whole point of the curriculum is for the girls to interact with one another. Most of the coaches are adult women. We do have, I believe, 2 men coaches this year for the first time.
We do.
But I think that, you know, the girls learning how to relate to one another and having positive female role models is really a cornerstone of the program, in my opinion.
Stephanie, discussing these lessons with girls certainly seems like it would make a positive impact in and of itself. But you incorporate running. What mm-hmm. role does running play in this exactly? And why do you add running to the mix?
Well, the purpose that running serves is to be able to give the girls a tangible sense of achievement, which instills confidence, and also a framework for setting life goals.
What's that like? I mean, it must be fun to and rewarding to see that unfold. Is that a really tangible product of this whole experience, Megan? You
absolutely.
You see young girls inspired by their own achievements.
You do, especially since I think some of the girls sign up for the program not knowing exactly what to expect, and they know they're going to be running, but they don't really know how much they're going to be running. And so I think a lot of the girls don't really see themselves as a true runner until they get involved in the program. And especially for a third grader, physically, she is a small person. For her to run a 5K is a tremendous achievement.
Sure.
To run 3 miles is a big deal for a little thing. So I think that, that part of instilling confidence that you reached a goal that you might not have thought, you know, initially that you could reach that goal.
About how many girls have participated in the program here in the last, 9 years, Stephanie?
Oh, gosh. We have 600 girls participating this spring, and that number has grown steadily over the course of the past 9 years. We started our first year with just 23 girls in the program.
To 600?
Wow.
Yes. That is quite a trajectory.
And actually, on a nationwide level, in last year, the 1 millionth girl went through the Girls on the Run program. So it's a very large...
Is it in all 50 states? Or
it's in 49.
Most 49?
Yes.
Well, get to work on that, would you please?
I believe South Dakota is the only state that does not have a program.
I'm speaking with Stephanie McClintock, director of Girls on the Run in Mid-Michigan, and Megan Tressel, a volunteer coach with the program whose daughter has been a participant. I was a young person who got bitten by the running bug. I have to ask this question. Out of all of these girls that have participated in the program, have you seen a young girl who's just entered the program kind of very lukewarm at best about running and then just been bitten by the bug? Has that ever happened?
It has.
Because I think young people in particular, especially the ages that you're working with here, that kind of thing happens.
I agree.
Yeah. Have any of them gone on to participate competitively in running because of their participation in Girls on the Run?
My own daughter was in Girls on the Run our very first year that we had the program in Shiawassee County, and now she runs track and cross country at Michigan State.
Stephanie, I know you see girls get involved in the program and really respond to it, really mm-hmm. like it. What kinds of feedback do they give you about their experiences? What kinds of things do they say after they've been at this for a while?
It's almost exclusively very, very positive for the girls as well as their parents and their teachers. So, you know, parents report that the girls really do seem more confident and happier and healthier. And teachers see girls that are willing to share their thoughts and stand up for themselves and others at school. As a matter of fact, we have a program at Marble Elementary in East Lansing where it came to my attention recently that they have several girls on their team this year who are fifth graders, and this is their third year participating. And so Coach Maggie at the Marble Elementary site took the lead on setting up a peer coach program for these girls, and they have really fallen right in line with helping organize lessons and preparing information and actually delivering the lessons to the other girls on their team. So it's remarkable to see them have the confidence to kind of step into a leadership role like that, and then also an inclusive, secure enough environment that they're, you know, happy to do that, and that they're, you know, the other girls on their team are willing to accept that kind of leadership from them.
Megan, talk to us a little bit more about your daughter. She's involved in the program too. Just generally, what's her experience been like?
You know, it's been interesting for my daughter because she's one of those kids that she goes full throttle into whatever she does, but she did not consider herself a runner. And she started the program as a fourth grader and participated 2 years ago and then last year as a fifth grader. And my daughter has completed 6 5Ks now. I've completed them with her. I didn't consider myself a runner before I, you know, got involved in this program. Mm. So for us, it's been a really kind of a cool experience. It's kind of come full circle and discovered that we have something in ourselves that we didn't know was there.
Mm. Now, every time the group gathered, do you run every single time the group gathers?
Yes, and the distance that they run in their workouts increase over time as they, you know, build up endurance and prepare themselves physically and mentally for the 5K at the end of the season.
But is 5K, so 5K is kind of a goal.
That is, the goal all throughout. And they know that 5K is coming at the end of the program cycle.
There must be some number of girls who don't want to stop at 5K once they really get into it.
Absolutely.
Did you let them go 10 on occasion or what?
Well, they crossed the finish line eventually, but I guess they could just keep going if they wanted to.
They're out there running somewhere. We're not sure. We talked about volunteer coaches, Stephanie. Do you have a need for coaches right now?
Right now, we do not. Our spring program is underway, and all of our sites are fully staffed with coaches. But looking ahead to next spring, we certainly will. And coaches will begin signing up through an application on our website in the fall. And then they become trained in January and February.
You're trying to teach life lessons here, though. I suppose there's a need for people who are more than just coaches. I realize running is the core activity, mm-hmm. but do you need volunteers for other reasons?
Well, our end of season 5K event is coming up in May, on May 22nd at Michigan State University. We begin and end in front of the auditorium, and we need lots and lots of volunteers for that event. People to direct traffic, man water stations, help with registration.
How involved do the parents of these girls get in the process? Do the parents ever join you on the runs?
No, they don't during our twice weekly meetings, but we do strongly encourage that every girl that runs the 5K on May 22nd has a running buddy. So a lot of the girls, moms, dads, siblings, tend to run with them in the race. So in that way, they are involved. But you've got a lot of girls whose families are runners, per se, and mm-hmm. have, you know, gotten them involved in the program. So I think it just depends on the family. My experience has been very positive as far as parents supporting what we're doing and supporting their daughters.
What would you say to current state listeners out there who are thinking about becoming a volunteer coach like you?
Oh, do it. Do it. It is so fulfilling, whether you're a mom, a dad, even if you don't have kids, if you're a teacher, if you love kids, this is such a great, rewarding program.
Where do you meet in this area, though? You mentioned Marble School, Stephanie. Mm-hmm. Where are there a lot of locations where
there
you
are
gather?
About 45 program sites across the five counties that we serve. Okay. So throughout many, many communities within the, we have locally here, we have several programs in East Lansing, Waverly, Okemos, Hazlitt, DeWitt.
And a website is obligatory here. Tell us where our listeners can go to learn more.
GOTRMidMichigan.org.
GOTR for Girls on the Run. GOTRMidMichigan.org. I've been speaking with Stephanie McClintock, Director of Girls on the Run in Mid-Michigan, and Megan Tressel, a volunteer coach with the program whose daughter's been a participant. Continued success.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Current State is looking for more nominations for our Neighbors in Action feature. Help us out. Email us your suggestions to currentstate@wkar.org. Please put Neighbors in Action in the subject line, or you can tweet us @KAR Current State. Please tell us a little bit about why you think they should be featured for the great work they do. Thanks for joining us today. It's Current State on WKAR. Pianist and MSU professor Ron Newman takes to the stage of Fairchild Theater this Friday evening at 7:30. Newman's feature is part of the College of Music's Artist Faculty Recital Series. He stopped by Current State Studio S yesterday to play a few tunes and chat with WKAR's Peter Wharf. Ron gets things started by telling us about his Friday night bandmates.
Some of my best friends and people I've been playing with for years and years, the drummer is Larry Oakletree,
yep,
from Battle Creek. Was on the road for a number of years with real famous big bands. My only main complaint with Larry is that when he came off the road, I did not know him, and he came to Michigan State and got a degree in music and business and stuff, and not once did he come in and audition for the jazz band. I didn't know who he was. I went, how do you... I said, but I try not to hold that against him. You know, marvelous player. Ed Fidawa, who's a local bassist that plays all over, and he's also the principal bassist with the Lansing Symphony. And, you know, he started, we're about the same age, and he was a rock and roller who's one of those people that just, whose interests just kept widening. He came to the bass teacher at Michigan State, Virginia Bodman, and said, hey, could I take some classical bass lessons, you know, many, many years ago? And she says, sure. And now he goes that direction. Just a great bass player, plays in the blues and funk bands around. And then, of course, my wife, Sunny Wilkinson, will be joining us on a number of tunes. And she's a great singer. We had a great concert with the Lansing Symphony Jazz Band last week. And it was just, it's always a great experience.
Your Friday concert's going to be centered around a very well-known American pianist, composer. Who is that?
Chick Corea.
All right.
And it kind of fell into place. I like playing Chick's music. And Sonny had just done a concert with a band at Hillsdale College, and it was a Chick Corea concert. She knew a bunch of tunes, and So I said, hey, I like to do these tunes too. So that's kind of the genesis. We'll be doing other things too, but the bulk of the material comes from Chick Corea.
Why was it important for you to choose Chick Corea? Oh, maybe I should just ask what's important to know about him as listeners.
Chick Corea, when he hit the scene, it was in the late 60s. He first became known probably as the pianist for Miles Davis when Herbie Hancock left his band, and it was a fairly avant-garde group. It was that transition that Miles was making into the fusion area and free jazz, and Chick Corea was very good at that. He was starting to work with a group called Circle, which was Anthony Braxton and a very avant-garde group, but he also had his own particular style. And about the same time, he came out with an album called Now He Sings, Now He Sops. And this one was kind of the one that brought him to people's attention, and especially piano players. He had a particular brilliance of playing, a particular way of working with the materials that was new. And that's what it's all about, in the sense of being a recognized innovator, is you come up with some things that are new and other people like them enough that they go in and at least to some extent try to copy what you do. Shortly after that, he didn't abandon the idea of free jazz, but he really wanted to appeal to more people, and he said, why not? And he formed a Latin jazz group called Return to Forever. And that's where the bulk of material comes from, and that's where a lot of people know him from, because that was a very popular band. I mean, I saw it here at the MSU Auditorium, sold-out crowd, and many other places. And so he has just continued to thrive and be this marvelous, marvelous musician that we like to listen to and to play his music.
Who are some of the other players we might know about from Return to Forever?
Well, the Return to Forever group was together for a relatively short time, but it was Stanley Clark was the bass player that most people really gravitated toward. He was one of the very first to make electric bass a virtuosic instrument, and it almost sounded like he was playing guitar just down an octave. And once somebody breaks through a barrier, then everybody else does it. So Stanley Clark was doing things that I think a lot of people felt were just not possible. And of course, 5 years later, every junior high kid in the world that is, you know, wants to play that style of music has tried to amp, you know. I mean, first time Dr. J does that under the basket layup, you know, you go, that was impossible, you know, it was impossible, but every 10-year-old kid's now trying to do it. And so he was one of a group that started the virtuosic bass players.
What do you want to play for us today that we'll preview Friday?
Well, we're not going to preview Friday at all, actually. Okay. I don't know why.
Fair enough.
Let's do something straight ahead. How about All the Things You Are, Jerome Kern?
Ron Newman and friends perform Friday night at Fairchild Theater. Thanks, Ron. For Current State, this is Peter Wharf.
And that's our program for today. Coming up tomorrow on Current State, two veteran reporters come to Studio S for our March month in review. Kathleen Gray of the Free Press, Gongwer editor Zach Gorchow, help us deconstruct some of the issues that made headlines in March. Plus, we'll speak with the MSU artist faculty cellist Seren Bagratuni about the upcoming week-long Cello Plus concert series. This year we'll bring together some of his old chamber music favorites and some of his old chamber music friends. That and more Thursday on Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.